Hello and welcome to Mega City Book Club, the podcast all about the galaxy's greatest comics, particularly the British ones. I'm Emma Clark, and my guest making their first appearance in the book club is Slo Smitch. Welcome to the book club, Slo.
Hello. Hello, Eamon. Hello, listeners.
Well, it's great to have you. Now, I'm in the UK and you're in Poland, so your comics origin story is going to be an interesting one for us. What were your first comics and how did you discover British comics?
Okay, now that's a bit of a longer story. Basically, there were always comics around me growing up because I have three older siblings, two older cousins, well, one older cousin now, sadly. And basically, all their hand-me-downs piled up at my home and at the grandparents' home where I spent a lot of time. So I read and reread them, and also I got the comics as they came, because mostly those juvenile Donald Duck ones with those crappy plastic toys and all. And through them, I became aware of Judge Dredd, oddly, because aside from those weekly floppy Donald Duck ones, there were also like smaller but way thicker books. And at the back of one of them that was actually literally came out, or maybe it's like the British cover days, it came out at the same time as I was born, and it was a hand-me-down. At the back, there was an advert for some more grown-up, not completely adult, but a more grown-up comic, and it featured Judge Dredd, and it's a testament to Carlos Esquerra's genius that it stuck with me, and I always had this Judge Dredd in the back of my mind, even back when I was not aware what it even is. So as I grew up, I looked it up on the internet. I started reading some odd bootleg scans on the internet, and it developed into a fascination, into becoming a fan, and I got them properly, legally, and through Judge Dredd got into Brother 2000 AD, and through Brother 2000 AD I got into British comics, and here I am.
Fascinating. Now, you mentioned off air that you were doing a prog slog. Are you still in the prog slog?
Yes, it slowed down because I have some other reading to do for some literary meetings with the Avant-Garde Association that we'll talk more about later, and also I decided to branch out. So I did not only do Proxlog, but also the Star-Lord of Fun, the Reaction, or whatever names Conrad and Fox will come up for others. So right now I'm dividing my attention between the prog. I'm in 2009, in May, I believe, and Battle, the pre-merger Battle, as the post-merger one is hard to find. So I'm up to August 76. So Darkies Mobs just started.
Oh, that's interesting. Darkies Mob. Okay. From the 2000 AD, the Star-Lord Battle action, what were your favorite stories so far? What ones particularly stand out to you?
That's a tough one, because I'm the Proxlog is an experience. You know, if I want the best stories, I'll take a look at the collections, part of the draw is the culture of the mix in every issue, so in every prog, in every issue, when we are talking about less unique comics. But I think the ABC Warriors and Nemesis and Slain would be some of the top ones, so you can already recognize one of my favorite writers. And of course, Judge Dredd. I mean, it all comes back to Judge Dredd for me.
Excellent stuff. Well, you've mentioned a favorite writer. We're going to get to him. Tell us, because we talked about a couple of books that you'd read, perhaps not all that long ago, and we decided on one for the book club today. What have you chosen for your first appearance?
I chose the Treasure of British Comics collection of Concrete Surfers from the pages of Gin T, and written by Pat Mills and illustrated by Christine Ellingham. Ellingham, I don't know if the H is silent or not.
Yes, Pat Mills and Christine Ellingham, Gin T, January to June 1978, and there's a Gin T summer special story, which was also from 1978. And this is a Treasury of British Comics collection, as you say, from 2020. So, first of all, why did this one make the shortlist for you?
I mentioned to you in the email that the broad general reason that this is a great example of Pat Mills' politics, and I like to market it to friends as the Communist Manifesto masquerading as a comic about girls on skateboards. But also there is a small personal story for me, because during a convention that I helped organize, it was the second day. I was really tired. I was really down. There was a combination of like the stresses of organizing a convention and also some more personal stuff, and also just having a bad day, as it happens to all of us. And I just sat down when I had some time and started reading Concrete Surfer. And honestly, the pages, every second page, either had me tearing up or laughing out loud. So it really helped me get through that day. And I'm not saying this is a cure for depression, but it is a good thing, a good wholesome comic to help you through a bad day.
Excellent stuff. And when you say you managed to pick it up at a convention and start reading it, are you reading them in English or in Polish translations?
I'm reading them in English. I don't think it's been translated to Polish. I have a friend who reads some more of those. I do get an idea what is being translated, but I don't think much or anything of Treasury has been translated. So I had it digitally back then, and due to my love for it, I later got it in paperback. So I am Rebellion's faithful soldier. They make a lot of money on me.
So do you follow the British Treasury releases then?
Not religiously. I'm not getting all of them as they come out, but I try to I pay attention to them and get the ones that seem particularly interesting to me. And also I keep my eyes out for the bundles on Humble Bundle. I got a lot of Treasury stuff there, so things I probably would not have gotten otherwise, like Johnny Future,
which we've covered on the book club with Keith Richardson. Okay, well, you mentioned girls and skateboarding. Tell us about the setup of Concrete Surfer and the main characters.
Well, the main character is named Jean, she's just come back from Australia, as we're informed by the second panel, which is, I mean, I suppose Christine Ellingham was instructed to depict Australia in one panel. So it's it's a guy in an Akubra holding a boomerang, and he's sticking out of the kangaroo's pouch. So she's just come back from Australia, where she, or rather her parents, tried to make a new, better life for themselves, but they failed. So they're still selling off their stuff and getting ready for the return. And she went ahead and now stays at her cousin and aunt and uncle. And therein lies the central conflict, because the cousin, Carol, is very, I don't know if if saying she's very intelligent is the right thing, but she's very successful at school, at gymnastics, academically, etc. And her parents are wealthy, and her father is owns a factory, or at least manages it. So therein, as we can expect from Pat Mills, lies the central conflict between the working class heroine down on her luck and the people in positions of authority, people with wealth, people with power.
As you can say, straight away you can see those Pat Mills themes emerging. And Cousin Carol does seem to have it all, as you say, sort of top of the class, great at gymnastics, got the looks, rich parents. There is obviously, we will find out as the story progresses, there's more to them meets the eye to Cousin Carol, who is not as all sweetness and light as she makes out, as I guess would befit a comic aimed mostly at young girls in 1978.
Yes, and so we've covered the girls' part, now for the skateboarding part. That this is a hobby that Jean picked up back in Australia, and it's not that big over in England, or at least where the action takes place. And so she introduces other girls to it, and also, well, hilarity ensues and also drama ensues, as Carol at first is apprehensive about skateboarding, then decides to join in on the fun, but tries to one-up Jean, and also the teacher gets involved, and random passersbys that get in the way and either narrowly avoid collision with skateboarding children or actually get hurt by them.
So I'll just mention a brief history of Jinty Comic that ran from 1974 to 1981, 393 issues as ever, with a British comic from the 70s. It's perhaps no surprise to either of us to hear that Pat Mills was sort of there at the creation, as he was for so many comics.
Well, it is a bit surprising for me, because they are being rediscovered, but the girls' comics are sort of out of the mainstream, as niche as the mainstream is for British comics. So I always think of the battle in 75 as the first great founding by Pat Mills. So seeing it go back to 74 is another interesting thing for me.
And it would seem that Jinty had a combination of sort of social realism stories, but also they had some science fiction stories. And some of those have been collected by the Treasury of British Comics. I put in our notes that there was a release of a story called Fran of the Floods, which is a sort of apocalyptic type story. The one I missed out, which I didn't put in our notes, was that there was also, they did a release of two stories called Land of No Tears and The Human Zoo, which was another science fiction based story. I haven't read either of those releases from the Treasury, and they've not come up on the book club yet. I don't know if they've come across your radar at all, Slow.
I read both of them, and Concrete Surfer is the best of the bunch. And I believe there's also another one, but it's not that branded with Jinty. I have it in digital, but I have not yet read it. But A Spell of Trouble.
Okay.
Oh my gosh, she's Spanish, I believe. So it's Trinitintura, I believe you would pronounce it. I believe that's also from the pages of Jinty.
Oh, interesting. I'll have to have a look at that one as well. So let's go back to our favourite, Pat Mills, as a writer. I'm guessing you've mentioned this already, Slain and Nemesis and other stories. You're a fan of Pat Mills's work.
Yeah, so of course not all of it. Like every author, he has his ups and downs. But in general, I find myself aligning with him politically on most things. And also, I love just his old school approach. When comics started getting grown up, I noticed in the Proxlog, he sometimes went along with it. I mean, like the later Stain stories, but he also often just had simple fun with it. And he always tried to stick with the 5-page format for anthologies. You can see that many comics in the 2000s are clearly written for the trade and broken up into episodes. Pat Mills never did that, in my opinion.
Perhaps it's because of Pat's writing around about comics, his memoirs, his Substack, which I subscribe to, and so on. But I find it difficult to think of other writers from British comics where we know quite as much about their politics as we do with Pat. He's very clear about his views on comics and politics and the sort of representation of previously underrepresented people in British comics?
Of course, it's always with hindsight. So I do take some of his claims about what he tried to achieve at times with a grain of salt. I do believe that sometimes he is prone to exaggerating, perhaps not his influence, that much is undeniable, but perhaps over-exaggerating his intentions, but nonetheless, broadly speaking, he did succeed in making comics more working class, and he did remain unapologetically left wing most of the time.
Yes. And of course, the other thing that we know Pat Mills for is very good research, particularly at a time when research involved a lot of, you know, libraries and books and magazines rather than the internet. And here again, like sometimes when he would take cribs from popular culture, here he is reflecting something that was getting very exciting in the late 1970s, which, of course, is skateboarding, a bit of a boom going on at the time. Now, we established off air that neither of us have ever been skateboarders. My brother was a skateboarder in the late 70s and early 80s. So some of this stuff that's in here was sort of familiar to me from that point of view. What did you make of the representation of skateboarding and the culture around it at this time in the comic?
Well, I have even less of a frame of reference because there was some skateboard around the house, but I never actually saw anyone use it. So for me, it's an abstracted sport. Like for me, it's about as abstract as Arrowball in Harlem Heroes. It's just a tool for the plot. So I honestly can't really say much about it. Except for the fact that it's well illustrated. At no point do I look at it and think that's not how skateboarding works. Because let's be honest, some of the sports comics, even if you did not know the sports, you could see that that's not how human bodies works, etc. Here it remains grounded. That much I can say.
Yeah, I don't know what Pat and Christine Ellingham did to sort of familiarise themselves with skateboarding culture in the late 70s. But it seems to me that they've, you know, they sort of nailed it in terms of naming the moves that were available to skateboarders at the time. The skateboards themselves, which I'm guessing are the sort of plastic-decked skateboards from the 70s as opposed to the sort of wooden and grip-tape-decked skateboards that we have now. But they look perfect. The moves look perfect. They trot out certain moves that she does, that Jean does, and they name them. They show how she does the various tricks and so on. I think they've done a pretty good job of representing skateboarding at the time. Now, I did put in our notes, Slo, about the Ollie, which has become the sort of standard move of modern skateboarding, but it wasn't actually invented until 1978 by a chap, I gather, called Alan Ollie Gelfland, who invented the Ollie move. So in this comic, we see old school skateboarding, I guess, before they could do the impressive jumps with the board at the same time.
Yes, well, they do some impressive jumps with the Skaber, just a bit of a different kind, like the very odd, what do they call it, monkey grip, where they...
The monkey grip, yep, with bare feet, yes.
Well, where they do jump with the skateboard, but they, yes, they hold it up with their toes, which is
exactly
pretty odd. And I don't think you would see Tony Hawk do that a lot these days.
Exactly. We didn't see Tony Hawk barefoot gripping the board with his toes in order to do the jumps, to do an ollie. Because it looks like an ollie, except you're holding the board with your toes. So, yeah, interesting stuff. Now, the other thing, of course, in the book is Jean is... She's a stranger back in this country. Her family is still in Australia. She's staying with her cousin and her cousin's parents. She's got various misadventures to do at the school. Somehow she manages to go to the wrong school early on and gets embarrassed and so on. But one of the things that she does is she introduces skateboarding to the local girls, and she seems to find her friends and her, in a way, her skateboarding tribe through her skateboarding. What did you make of the aspect of the story that deals with loneliness and finding your tribe through your sort of sports and pastimes? What did you make of all that?
I think it's great, and perhaps depending on the reader's levels of social anxiety, it may resonate differently. But as we said, there is the conflict between Jean and Carol, but it is not physical violence. It is and up until the very end, it's really subtle. It's things that could be just misunderstandings. So this is something that really resonates with me when I'm always anxious. Oh my God, are they just pretending to be my friends? Are they serious, or are they joking about things? So this is. This is great in that regards, where also later on we see that, you know, that there are friends and there are acquaintances. So even people who are genuine with Jean earlier on, we can see that in the end, when push comes to shove, even their genuine affection just isn't as strong as the previous friendship built with Carol. So this is... This is something that was represented very well, in my opinion.
And of course, she forms a club. The club is quite successful. Carol appears interested, and because of her gymnastics ability, she soon becomes a whiz on the skateboard. And it's going to lead up to the sort of inevitable conflict between the two girls, when there's going to be a competition that they're both entered for and both seem to be favourites to win. What did you make of the sort of rivalry and betrayal in the story, which I'm guessing seems to me quite familiar from girls' comics of the time?
Well, the rivalry is, as I said, of course, my experience with those girls' comics is pretty limited. They're much harder to do a Prog Slug like thing, because they have not exactly been digitized or anything. So I'm only relying on the handful collections, but I do think it's similar to most of them, but way more subtle. As I said, there are things like, you know, if you have someone who excels academically, and you can't expect that person to just start ignoring their studies. So whether it's just carrying on with their lives, or if it's trying to one up you, trying to position themselves as smarter or better than you, that sort of uncertainty that permeates like all over half of this collection, this subtlety is what really does it for me. It's not it's not a rivalry of, oh, I want to be number one skateboarder. No, I want to be the one number one skateboarder. No, this is, we're both, I introduced skateboarding, I joined in, I'm trying to do my more gymnastics-oriented things. I'm just sticking to the tricks and having fun. And so this is not direct competition until the final confrontation. So that is the subtlety and ambiguity that I like.
Let's turn then away from Pat Mills' story for a moment and look at the black and white artwork by Christine Ellingham. You know, representation for girls' comics, representation of this new sport, all in lovely black and white, very sharp reproduction here in the digital version, at least, that I've got. You've got the hard copy. You've got hard copy and digital, I think, haven't you?
Yep, and the printing is great, so none of the sharpness is lost on paper.
What do you make of her artwork?
I have mixed feelings, but it's a mixture of good and great, not a mixture of bad and good. So they're mixed but predominantly good. What stands out to me is that there is really interesting page layouts, because there aren't like round panels or triangular panels or anything. It's all done with squares and rectangles, but they're arranged very creatively. Often things spill out of the panels. Often there are borderless panels that sort of merge into the background of the other panels. That's great. But on the other hand, there is the sad downside that often the backgrounds do get lost. We have great facial expressions, great costumes, but they're standing or skateboarding in a white void. So it's not perfect, but honestly, it's also not like all of the things happen in the white void. It's just something that pops up like a quarter of or a fifth of the time.
Yes, I noticed that she's very good at girls' hair and clothing. I think she's very good at depicting the movement of the skateboarders. As you say, the panel backgrounds often non-existent. It is just the white void behind the main characters, which is an interesting technique. Obviously, it would help fit the demands of a weekly comic when you've got to produce, what is it, 3 or 4 pages a week, isn't it? But yeah, it's impressive. It does... I mean, as a depiction of skateboarding, I think it's quite good. What did you make of her, you know, when she does movement and the actual skateboarding moves?
That's something I can't really say a bad thing about. It's great. Well, there's literally maybe one panel where there's like they call it a catamaran or a trimaran, where there are lots of girls piled up on a couple of skateboards, and another girl tries to jump over them, and in that one one skateboard gets lost somehow. But honestly, it's one panel from a whole collection. It's barely worth mentioning.
Okay, so that's Christine Ellingham. She was art editor for Tammy Comic and then was a freelance artist with the famous Barden agency in the 1970s. She helped co-create several stories for Jinty, and I'm glad to know that she's sort of still working as a professional artist, living here in Suffolk in the UK. So it's delightful to know that she's still going. I hope that the Treasury sent her a copy of this. I'm sure they did.
Yeah, it's a pity that they did not commission a cover or a pin-up from her, because the aforementioned the Spell of Trouble collection, I took a look at that, and I think she was like 81 at the time, Trinitin Ture, and I don't know if she did the cover. I believe so. And also she did one painting specially commissioned at the back. I did not read the whole collection, but I skimmed through it. And I wish they did that for Concrete Surfer. I don't know if they had trouble contacting her or the money wasn't right or anything, but it's a pity. It's a pity.
Interesting. Yeah, that's an interesting thought as to whether they could still contact her for some work. Okay, now you've said that this was a story that you really enjoyed. It sort of like, you know, brightened your day and is fun to dip into again and again from time to time. What is it that you find most successful and most joyful about this story?
Well, as always, it's the satisfaction of the bad guy getting their comeuppance. but it's extended. It's not just Carol that has all her scheming revealed, but also her parents that are, maybe they're stuck up, maybe they're a bit derisive, but in the end, they don't really do anything wrong, except for being rich. And we know what the stance on that is. So you can see that even when everything is revealed and the Carol's parents want to make up for it to Jean's parents. But by that point, they found their own way. And they don't need help. I think it's a great thematic thing of we don't need to prove anything to the ruling class. We can forge our own future. Maybe I'm getting too deep, and maybe now I'm doing the Patmos revisionist thing and injecting some more political messaging. But that's how it read to me. Maybe it's my brain rot, but that's, and similarly for that one, I like a bit less the aforementioned skateboarding club that basically gets thought up by Jean, but she can't even propose it because Carol beats her to it. And it gets taken over by Carol and their teacher, who are stuck up. They want it to be a gymnastics base. They want it to be artsy, etc. And sadly, it is not like rebellion is fermenting, even not just from Jean, but also from Carol's friends, who also just want to have fun. But sadly, it is not resolved by their collective powers, but instead another teacher, the head teacher, looks and says that the girls should have fun and not waste their time on trying to make it into a new big arty thing. So this time it's authority appended by another bigger authority, which I'm not that much of a fan of, but at least the right people get their comeuppance, so it's still fine.
It is. I mean, it is delightful. And when Jean's parents turn up towards the end, and the class distinctions are further emphasised, that's quite interesting. But also, I think the title "Concrete Surfer" feels very street based and working class as well. And I think, you know, it suits this title perfectly.
Yeah, I have no idea. In Poland, surfing is not that much of a thing because the Baltic Sea is pretty cold. The waves are not that big, so there's like a handful of windsurfers, and that is all. And in Australia, of course, there's a lot of surfing, and I don't know how much the word surfer as it is concrete aside, how much surfing was a thing back in the 70s Britain, because I don't really associate your beaches with being particularly warm and warm and friendly for surfing either.
Yeah, it's very much wetsuits, all out, total bodysuit surfing in the UK, if it exists. Yeah, great stuff. Well, let's turn back to the art then for a moment and play the grill page game. Now, I couldn't find any pages of Christine Allenham's on the Comic Art Fans site, but I'm hoping some of this artwork still survives. If it did survive and we could afford it, which pages of original art would you like to have in your collection from this book?
Okay, so the basic thing is we get two, yeah?
Yeah.
So the probably the biggest contender would be page 8. In the digital, it would be page 10 because, of course, it includes the covers. It's harder to find Grail pages for those old school comics because they were limited to those 3 or 3.5 pages each week. So there is not, like, when you read script writing suggestions nowadays, it's always like the scene transitions should be the page transitions. You couldn't do that in those comics. So they're really busy pages. And thus, it's hard to find a theme for a page. So it's mostly, honestly, finding Grail panels would be way easier than finding Grail pages. But yeah, page 8 is just brilliant because it showcases this ambiguity where Carol seems to be conciliatory, but Jean has a lot of thought bubbles where she's not so sure about Carol's honesty. And also there is this beautiful example of both the class divide, but also of the fact that it's 70s, where a dishwasher is presented as some absurd luxury. I mean, still nowadays, it's not absurd to not have a dishwasher, but it's not no longer such a luxury. And here, when Jean offers to help with washing up her aunt, Carol's mother, says, "Goodness me, no, Jean, we've got an automatic dishwasher. Just a press of the button, it's all taken care of." And what does Jean think to herself? "They've got everything. When I think of poor mom and how she has to wash dishes in an all-night cafe till her hands are raw, so she and dad can get back from Australia, it makes me want to cry." I mean, it's beautifully, beautifully 70s.
Wonderful stuff.
So page 8, I think page 8 will be the winner. But basically any page with lots of skateboarding trips. Page 16, this is the rare circular panels from Christine Allingham. Yeah. I said there were no circular panels, but apparently I was wrong. I missed literally 2 panels. And no, there are more on page 21. But yeah, while they showcase the theme of skateboarding way better, they have nothing on the 70s and on the class conflict themes. So yeah, it's page 8 for me, definitely.
Okay, but I would also post a picture of page 16 and the wonderful skateboard tricks as they're depicted. With, as you say, 2 circular panels, which is nice.
So, yeah, that's my first Grail page. And then I suppose I should turn to the back pages where we have some covers.
We do, yes. We have some color covers reprinted at the back.
And honestly, of the covers, there are only 2 real contenders because mostly they're montage covers of various strips from Jinty. So the 2... covers that are exclusively Concrete Surfer are the first and the last cover on pages 73 and 80. And it's worth noting that they're not specially commissioned covers. They are clearly taken from the art for the inside issues and then somewhat edited and, of course, colored and with the header added, the price added, etc. And one of those covers, the 28th of January, is the Monkey Grip aforementioned.
Yeah.
And the other one is the 3rd of June, and this is the finale or the penultimate one. And It's this one that's the winner for me. It at the first glance it's also the cover for the collection. I say at the first glance because first of all it's a different coloring, but also there is some other editing. The other skateboarding girl that might be supposed to be Carol, but it's not really certain because the coloring really muddles it up, because you don't really know if she's got fair red hair or maybe she's blonde and on this cover this is for brown, etc. But on the cover of the collection, it's another image taken from elsewhere in the book. So, I'm getting into the trivia. Yeah, the final cover is the one that wins it for me, not because it's in any way particularly better than the Monkey Grip one. It's just that something about the exposed toes makes me kind of uncomfortable, and I'm not sure that having a teenage girl with exposed toes is the sort of messaging that I want to give out by hanging it on my wall.
Yeah, well, I mean, the one for the 3rd of June 1978, which, as you say, is sort of sampled for the front cover of the collection, is a perfect skateboarding cover, and it just has only this story, Concrete Surfer, on it, whereas some of the other covers in between the two you've mentioned have got, like, other stories on the covers as well.
That being said, they do showcase the trends in girls' comics perfectly, like Slave of the Swan, Victim of a Cruel Revenge, Continue Katrina's Moving Story.
Yeah, see our mystery thriller, Shadow on the Fen, yeah. Slave of the Cat's Paw, see the terrific ending of her story, yeah. It's all, as you say, there's certain girls' comics themes there, aren't they? Paula's Puppets, Faceless and Mysterious, They Possess Evil Powers. Where's that reprint? Great stuff, though. So those will be your Grail pages, which I will post on all the social media when this episode comes out in May. Anything else you had from your notes on Concrete Surfer that you wanted to bring up before we move on to guest projects?
I do not think so. I think that would be all on the book itself. I think we haven't mentioned the web store exclusive hardcover, I believe, but there's really not much to say about it, except that it exists and it has a different cover. Personally, I prefer the paperback cover. That's down to personal preference, probably.
Well, that just reminded me to mention that Concrete Surfer by Mills and Ellingham is available from the Treasury shop. It's $9.99 over here in the UK for the paperback version. It's an absolute bargain at the moment at $4.99 digitally. Or as you say, there is the web shop hardback special edition, which is still available for $19.99. I'm guessing didn't sell as well as they hoped it to, because most of those web shop exclusives tend to sell out. It's a slightly harder sell, this one, a British girls comic from 1978 about skateboarding. Right, so that was wonderful. What an interesting book. And I did particularly enjoy, as you say, both the class depictions, the struggles, but also the depiction of late 70s skateboarding, which I know a little bit about, but not enough. Fascinating stuff. We turn to guest projects, and you mentioned earlier on an association called Avangarda, is that right?
Yep. Basically, it's Warsaw-based, but we have members in other cities in Poland, and I think we at times have members also abroad, but we're located in Warsaw. We're organizing two conventions a year. This is the biggest events we're doing. One in winter, so that's past, and we don't have the date for the next one yet. But in summer, we are organizing a completely free convention. There are ways to support us, of course, but this is open and free for everybody. It's called Basiliszek, which is Polish for basilisk, and it's taking place in July 5th to 7th. And I'm not personally involved in organizing it this year, but I will probably provide some talks. I will help with it. And of course, most of the listeners probably won't be in Poland at the time, but if if you just happen to be on holidays or maybe visiting family or anything, you're welcome. And so those are the biggest things. Also, every second Sunday, we're organizing open tabletop RPGs. It's called Czas na Przygodę, where you can just play anything. I often run Judge Dredd games, but I'm also working on some Strontium Dog homebrews that I'm eager to try. And hopefully Rebellion will give us some official licensed ones someday. So that's one thing. And also, you can always just reach out to us, and there are good odds that there is something to do with us when you're in Poland, because there are also Magic the Gathering meetings that I honestly could not tell you anything about, because that's not my thing. But also board games, literary meetings, things of various nature, because this is a bit of a translation issue, because in Polish there is a term fantastyka, which encompasses what I guess you would call speculative fiction, that encompasses both sci-fi and fantasy. But this is like the very broad thing that we're involved in. So it's both books and tabletop games and tabletop RPGs, board games, etc. So basically, hard to find a hobby that we would not be able to give you something.
And is the association on the internet? Is there an address we can find you?
Yes, there is. We're both on social media, and we have an old school web page. So there will be a link appended in the description.
I will put it in the show notes for this episode. Excellent stuff. And as you say, the Basilisk convention coming up in July.
Yes, there is. I plan to do some Rogue Trooper things to introduce perhaps the Polish audiences to Rogue Trooper in anticipation of the movie coming up.
Excellent stuff. Good timing. And tell us a little bit about your own crafting, because you've recently been making stuff, I think. Is that right?
Yes. I was learning to be a bespoke tailor for a while. Sadly, that was not to be, but I have been getting over some humps in my personal life, and now I'm back to sewing things. Not exactly tailoring right now, but I am making bow ties, neckties, ascot ties, and flat caps, and oh my God, this is the translation problem, because I could rattle off a dozen styles of caps, but they're all in Polish. But yeah, basically cap making is the broad term. And sadly, I'm not that great of a photographer, but I will try to picture some of my works. And you can just find me on Instagram, and also the link again will be appended, because I could tell you how to look me up, but that's a complicated Polish word, so.
Okay, well, again, I will put those links to your socials in the show notes for this episode. Have a look there and you'll find links to all of Slow's work, both his own creating and the Avant-Garde Association and the convention that's coming up. Great stuff. Slow, thank you very much for joining me this afternoon in April for a show that's coming out in May. Been great stuff.
And thank you for having me.
Absolute pleasure. We'll look forward to you returning to the podcast hopefully next year. We might do the other book you suggested. We'll talk about that another time.
Or I'll come up with a various other suggestions, but let's wait on that. Let's see if the listeners like me, because I would not like to impose myself on them.
Not at all. Don't worry about that. And thank you to everyone for listening to Mega City Book Club. As ever, find all of these links that we've been talking about at megacitybookclub.com. Follow the pod on Facebook, on Instagram, Threads, Mastodon, Blue Sky. We're probably on a new social media platform called Snake in Daffy, which is a skateboarding term I've learned from Concrete Surfer. And you can email me like Slow did at mcbcpodcast@gmail.com. If you've got some book suggestions or any comments or criticisms that you want to share, please get in touch. So until next time, when we're passing judgment on another great book, it's a goodbye from me and...
Do widzenia, as we say in Poland. Wow.